The following episode is intended for mature audiences. On the morning of July 12th, 1762, a warm breeze made its way through the halls of Changyang Palace. An earthy aroma from the thunderstorm the night before lingered in the air. The palace was unusually quiet. Only the sounds of the magpies chirping could be heard echoing through the halls. In the upper palace courtyard sat a large rice chest, basking in the intense heat from the sun. The chest was bound with a thick fibrous rope and topped with patches of fresh-cut grass, symbolizing a traditional Korean burial mound. Inside the rice chest was the body of 27-year-old Crown Prince Sado, who was ordered to enter the chest by his own father, King Yangjo, 8 days prior. Over the course of a week, the Crown Prince Sado would beg and plead to be released, only to have his cries ignored until eventually succumbing to the fierce heat, starvation, and dehydration. But why would a father commit such a horrific act to his own son? Were the rumors true? Was the Crown Prince Sado the sadistic serial killer that had been responsible for over 100 deaths in the palace? Or was this all part of a political conspiracy? Today, I'm telling you the story of the Mad Prince of Korea and the murders that haunted the royal court. Hello everyone, I'm your host Megan, and welcome back to Haunted History. I have a very exciting episode for you today. This is technically a bonus episode, and it's one that I found myself completely wrapped up in. And I have to admit, I didn't know much about Korean history prior to this, but when I heard this story, it just drew me in, and then when I started researching, I just could not stop. Now, before we get started, I did want to mention that the naming system of Korean royalty during this period was incredibly complicated. They had birth names, and then they had royal names given to them, and then sometimes new names, sometimes multiple new names, given to them after death. So many names. So for simplicity, I am just going to refer to one name. So for example, Prince Sado was actually named Sado after his death, but it's what he's most known as, so I am just going to use that name throughout the whole story. Another note is that the Crown Prince Sado's wife, Lady Hagyung, wrote a set of memoirs between 1795 and 1805. It's translated in English, and you can find it, I would think, at any bookshop or online. I found the copy that I read online, and she shares her life with the prince in great detail. And I have to say, I found it one of the most fascinating things that I've read, and I really wasn't expecting that. But having such a detailed account of this part of history, especially this story, is pretty extraordinary, and I highly recommend you read it if you want some more insight and even more detail than what I'm about to give you today. So now, without further ado, let's get to today's story.
Sado 세자의 유산은 오늘날에도 여전히 역사학자들 사이에서 논쟁거리가 되고 있습니다. 조선 영조의 둘째 아들이자 정조의 아버지, 사도 세자. 지금부터 그의 이야기를 시작하겠습니다.
Our tale begins with the birth of a prince, Prince Yisan, who we're going to refer to as Prince Sado in this story. Prince Sado was born in the Kingdom of Joseon, which is modern-day Korea, in the year 1735. The Kingdom of Joseon was actually the last dynastic kingdom of Korea, and one that lasted over 500 years until it was replaced in 1897 with the Korean Empire. I'd like to take a moment to paint a picture of what life would have been like in this time period. For one, it would have been considered very strict and rigid. Society was heavily influenced by Confucianism, meaning they followed a very structured hierarchy with a focus on respect for elders and the utmost loyalty to the ruler. Social status and familial duty were paramount to to life. Society was organized into a very strict system. The king was at the top, along with his family. Under him, the Yangban, which were the scholars and the officials, and under them, the commoners, and then finally the slaves and the outcasts were considered the lowest class and generally seen as disposable. The king had a lot of power. He was considered the son of heaven, and his family would have lived a life of luxury with grand palaces and magnificent gardens. But they were also expected to strictly adhere to Confucian principles. This would have included rigorous studies, as education among the elite was extremely important. Even the queen and the concubines had an important role to play in the palace. They were to be a symbol of loyalty and virtue, and they would even engage in political affairs and would have had vital roles in court ceremonies. The king, even with all this power and luxury, wouldn't be sitting around idly. He would have also had a strict schedule filled with daily duties and tasks. Him and his team, which would have included scholars and ministers, would have attended court rituals and ceremonies, and would do essentially everything necessary for governing a kingdom. And not just governing, but governing well. That was the real goal. Although life would have looked idyllic from the outside, as I'm sure we all know, behind closed doors, there's always a different story. The royal court would have experienced rivalries from within the court, power struggles within families and factions, and let's not forget, the dynasty itself would have experienced conflict from neighboring powers. King Yongzhou was the 21st monarch of the Joseon dynasty and would end up going on to be one of the most celebrated rulers in Korean history. His firstborn son, Prince Hyojong, served as crown prince for a short time. However, he tragically died in 1728 at only 9 years old after being sick for several months. The king was devastated at his son's death, and also the kingdom was left without an heir, which was very stressful, I would imagine, after the dynasty had ruled for over 500 years. You definitely don't want to be the king that drops that ball. Well, luck, or so it would appear at the time, would be on the king's side, as just a few years later, his concubine, royal noble consort Lady Sonhui, gave birth to his second son, Prince Sado. Just a year after his birth, baby Prince Sado was named the crown prince. Although the king was delighted to finally have an heir, his kingdom duties seemed to have been all-consuming, and as a result, it's said that much of the prince's childhood was devoid of love and affection from his parents. He was largely raised by the eunuchs and palace ladies, with no real authority figure or person to guide him and show him the unconditional love that all children need. To make matters worse, as the prince grew older and started to develop his own personality, the king began to notice how his son couldn't have been more different than him. When spoken to, the prince was slow, reserved, and quiet, and when asked about his studies, he couldn't share any opinions or create his own thoughts about a subject. He was only worried about finding the correct answer. The king began to express his concerns to Sado's tutors, but the tutors remained adamant that he was a great student, and in class he showed no signs of struggling to understand or comprehend. As time went on, however, the situation became worse. The king started becoming agitated at the young prince's behavior. Things like his lack of organization, his motivation, or how he failed to socialize the way that the king wanted him to. In turn, Sado became increasingly uncomfortable around his father, and the extreme anxiety that would come up over him would make him sometimes seem incoherent. The king was very troubled by all of this, fearing that his son would not have the traits needed to be a good heir and ultimately be a good king. Unfortunately, instead of trying to foster a closer relationship with his son, he simply continued about his kingly duties and hoped that with age, maturity would follow. It was just after the crown prince's 9th birthday that it was announced that a marriage was to be arranged for him. A royal order was sent out requesting that families with eligible girls submit their names for the selection, and soon a marriage was arranged for the Crown Prince and Lady Hagyang. She was to be brought to the palace and taught the Confucian ideals of purity, obedience, chastity, and faithfulness. She would have been educated, taught the rituals of the palace, and her future responsibilities until her coming of age at 14. Palace life was nerve-wracking for Lady Hagyang. She was surprised at how strict the laws and rituals were, and she recalled how she would walk around in a constant state of caution, a constant feeling of anxiety deep in her belly. While Lady Hagyang was busy learning how to be the new Crown Princess, concerns for the Crown Prince began to grow. It was noticed by the palace staff that his playing was very erratic and aggressive. This made some of the ladies in waiting uncomfortable, and they even began gossiping about his strange behavior. Even Lady Hagyang began to notice that the prince struggled to complete his tasks and struggled to stick to his daily routine. And then one day, the prince suffered from what they would call a severe mental health episode. With no clear diagnosis, the consensus was that the pavilion the prince was staying in had become gripped by evil spirits and needed to be cleansed. Diviners were brought in to cleanse the pavilion, but it didn't change the prince's temperament. So they decided they should move him to a different pavilion entirely. It's still not clear exactly what happened during this episode, but it was marked as being a pivotal turning point in the prince's mental health. Some speculate it was the onset of schizophrenia. Others believe it could have been the onset of bipolar disorder. Throughout the story, with so many overlapping symptoms from one illness to another, you'll see why it's so hard for historians to agree on a possible diagnosis. Over the next few years, the prince's mental health would continue to decline. The prince and princess reached their coming of age at 14, and soon after, the princess became pregnant with their first child, a son. And while this should have been a happy time for the royal court, it was sadly anything but. When Weeso was born, the king was cold and distant. This is because one of his daughters, who he loved very dearly, had just died during childbirth, and the king felt jaded. He questioned why others were surviving childbirth, but his precious daughter did not. It wasn't until one night that the king, and we can only assume it was after having a dream or a vision of his daughter, proclaimed that Weeso had to be his daughter reincarnated. He suddenly became very doting and attentive to his new grandson, showering him with love and attention, and even going as far as naming him the new grand heir at only 10 months old. Prince Sado grew increasingly bitter and resentful, and would wonder why he didn't, and if he was even capable of getting that sort of love from his father. When Weeso died from sickness at 2 years old, the king was devastated and inconsolable. This only added to the growing distance between him and Prince Sado. Within that same year, however, Lady Hagyang became pregnant with another boy, Yisan. The king, this time, was ecstatic, feeling it was truly a blessing from the heavens. With the pressures of his new family and rising tensions between him and his father, the illness that had been lingering over the teenage Prince Sado began to take hold. His aggressiveness became worse. At times, he was irrational and paranoid. He had a lot of trouble managing his emotions and anxieties. The king, seeing this, viewed the prince as weak, but he was still determined to make a monarch out of his son, so he made the move to appoint him regent, which meant that Prince Sado now had the ability to make decisions on smaller administrative matters. The king wanted Prince Sado to have experience ruling the country. However, it seemed that no matter what decision Sado made, his father, being the strict and rigid man he was not happy. The king felt like his son was not yet competent to handle matters of the court. He would give the prince small tasks to complete, but Sado struggled, never able to complete anything without first asking his father's advice. This infuriated the king. How could the prince become a great ruler if he was not even able to handle the small issues within the kingdom? And so he began excluding Prince Sato from important court events. And when they were together, he was constantly chastising and berating his son in front of other members of the court and council. On a frosty November morning, tragedy would strike again as Prince Sato's sister, Wayup, passed away at only 19 years old after a measles epidemic swept through the capital. She was one of the first to contract the sickness and died after being sick only a few short weeks. This news was devastating to the prince, and it's often thought that he never recovered from her loss. Over the years, he and his sister formed a close bond. You see, she too felt that she was less favored by the king. The two confided in each other, both able to express their unhappiness with how their father treated them. Now, with his sister gone, the prince would throw fits of rage, venting to the eunuchs, ladies-in-waiting, or even his wife, Lady Hagyang. By this time, Prince Sato was frequently reading the Taoist scriptures. If you aren't familiar with Taoism, the main principles of their teachings are around the law of unity of the two opposite forces, yin and yang. And so the prince was constantly engulfing himself in this spiritual world. He mentioned to Lady Hagyang that if he could just learn to master a book of rites called the Jade Spine Scriptures, he would be able to command ghosts and spirits. So every night he immersed himself in his readings until one night he began hallucinating that he saw the thunder god. Although it was clear to those around him that what he claimed he was seeing wasn't there, to the prince it was very, very real. He then became frightened of the sky, the words jade and spine, and whenever the thunder would bellow, the prince would throw himself on the ground, covering his ears in a panic. The court began to clearly notice the prince's changing behavior. One day they would see him be everything that they could want in a crown prince. He was clear-minded, charitable, and mature. But on days that his illness consumed him, he was transformed to a different person entirely. He would hallucinate, speak incoherently, become paranoid, filled with rage, and aggressive. Soon, the bad days outweighed the good until it seemed that the illness had completely taken over. The prince withdrew from his daily tasks, continuously canceled his lectures, and stopped caring for his personal hygiene or grooming. And by now, his physical state matched his mental state. It was apparent the prince was very sick. Despite his seemingly very obvious illness, the king still tried to involve him in matters of the court, particularly trials and executions. When a rebel was condemned, the entire process had to take place with the bureaucrats and council members as witnesses. So this meant Sato had to attend. Lady Hagyang believes that the reason the king did this is because he actually detested executions and heavier matters of the criminal court. Apparently, he's expressed this several times. So his reasoning for involving Sato was so that he could focus on other matters. And, you know, some historians have said that it could be that Sato was showing interest in martial arts and the military. So this was an area that perhaps the king thought he would excel in. Whether this is true or not, obviously, we can never really know. When the trials had concluded for the day, the king would stop at the prince's residence and ask, "How are you?" And as soon as he heard his reply, he would turn and leave. Perhaps this was the king trying to show affection the only way he knew how, or perhaps it was for his own selfish reasons. Lady Hagyang believed that this was done in an effort that the prince's word would wash away all of the atrocities of the day, so the king could then enter his own quarters with a clear conscience. Regardless of the king's reason, Prince Sato only felt bitterness towards his father. Incidents between the prince and the king had now become a daily occurrence. One significant incident took place when the prince's mother was sick. As soon as he found out she was stricken with illness, the prince traveled to Chipak House to be close to her, After all, during these times, even the smallest sickness could take someone, and quickly. When the king found out, however, he was absolutely furious. It wasn't that the prince wasn't allowed to see his mother. It was that he didn't want the prince anywhere near his favorite daughter, Princess Hwanin, who was also there at the time. Angrily, he demanded that the prince leave and swiftly sent a royal message ordering the prince to remain at Naxin Hall, forbidding him to leave and subjecting him to punishment. The prince was angry and humiliated, and even threatened to take his own life. With the prince confined to Naxin Hall, the king continued his duties until one afternoon he decided to make an unexpected visit. The king was surprised at the state his son was in. He looked disheveled, his hair a mess, his face dirty, and his clothes looked like they hadn't been cleaned in weeks. The king assumed he must be drunk, a very serious offense at the time, as there was a ban on drinking. The king angrily yelled at the prince, accusing him of sneaking in liquor despite the ban. According to Lady Hagyoung, although the prince hadn't been drinking, he was fearful denying the accusations would make his father even angrier, so he simply agreed, so that the interrogation would end without a further argument. He ordered the prince to immediately have sessions with his tutors and then the ministers, so they could help remedy his actions. When the tutors arrived, the prince was filled with rage and began screaming at them and chasing them around the room. During the commotion, a lone candlestick fell and set Naxin Hall ablaze. The fire quickly spread and destroyed many of the great halls before finally being contained. Knowing the damage that had been done and fearful of the king's reaction, the prince simply said, "I just don't see how I can live," and made his way to a well in the courtyard and attempted to jump before being stopped by officials. Up until now, the prince's behavior had been unpredictable, erratic, and even aggressive at times. But by 1757, things would take a violent turn. The king's wife and mother, both of whom the prince absolutely adored, died within just a month of each other, sending Sato into a raging downward spiral. He stood in the courtyard, staring at the queen's monument, and began weeping endlessly, wishing out loud to die. Once he composed himself, he retreated to his quarters and began savagely beating one of the eunuchs. The act of inflicting rage upon another person seemed to temporarily ease the prince's pain, and so he quickly adopted this practice of beating the palace staff regularly, mercilessly, and unprovoked. This, of course, caused anyone in his residence to live in constant fear, not knowing when the crown prince would decide to release his rage upon them. On a seemingly normal morning in the palace, Lady Hagyoung was conversing with her ladies-in-waiting in one of the halls, when, without warning, the prince stormed in, holding the severed head of a eunuch, Kim Han-che. He held the head up, displaying it to each of the women, like he was proud at what he had done. The women were frightened, especially at the sight of blood trailing around the room, but in an effort not to anger the prince, they all did their best to remain calm. Over the following weeks, his violence would worsen. He began raping the ladies-in-waiting as he pleased, and then would brutally beat them when they would try to resist. It was at this moment that even Lady Hagyoung began to fear for her life and the lives of her children. It wasn't long after Sato became violent that the king was made aware that he had taken in a lady-in-waiting named Ping-e to be one of his consorts, and she ended up birthing him a son. Ping-e was a lady-in-waiting for the late dowager, and at that time it was absolutely forbidden to take a consort that already served an elder of the royal family. But Sato didn't care about this rule. He adored Ping-e, and he had been smitten with her for several years. The king demanded to know the location of Ping-e, but the prince refused, prepared to accept whatever the punishment would be. During the argument with the king, things became very intense, and a deranged Prince Sato ran outside and tried to jump into the courtyard well, but the water was frozen, so he ended up being hauled out by a guard once they realized that the ice broke his fall. This open attempt at taking his own life in front of others in the palace enraged the king. This was not how a future monarch should behave. Distressed, the king made the decision to forbid his son from joining in on important court meetings until he could find a way to remedy the prince's defiant and irresponsible actions. It was around this time that Sato's phobias also continued to grow, specifically his clothing phobia. He appeared to have an irrational fear of certain items of clothing and would often demand 20 to 30 outfits be laid out each day while he made his selection. In some instances, when an item of clothing made him afraid, particularly the pieces he believed were haunted with ghosts, he would demand to have it burned, acting erratic and violent in the process. In instances where there were not enough clothes made, either because they ran out of cloth or because the prince reached his allowance for that month, the prince would lash out and injure or kill those assisting him. When he finally did manage to get dressed into an outfit that he could wear, a process that sometimes could take days, he refused to take it off, wearing it until it was completely soiled. The prince's dressing ritual had become a high-stakes life-or-death event for palace staff, and unfortunately, many lost their lives during the process. Eventually, the murders could no longer be hidden. Bodies were being taken out of the palace daily, and new eunuchs and ladies-in-waiting were being brought in to take the place of the ones who were slain. Gossip of the prince's sadistic actions would eventually reach the king, who had no choice but to confront his son to find out if what was being said was true. Unable to lie to his father, the prince surprisingly confessed. Lady Hagyoung says in her memoirs that the prince told the king, "When anger grips me, I cannot contain myself. Only after I kill something, a person, perhaps an animal, can I calm down." When the king questioned why, the prince blurted out, "I am sad that your majesty does not love me, and I'm terrified when you criticize me. All of this turns to anger." The king was stunned at his son's reply, and after a few moments, he appeared to have softened, maybe in an act of desperation, hoping he could change his son's behavior, and then simply replied, "From now on, I will not be that way." For a brief moment, it seemed like things could only look up. The king was now fully aware of his son's actions, and in turn, Sato assured the king that he would not commit these atrocities again. The king even began showing some compassion toward the prince, asking how his sleep was and how he had been eating. Lady Hagyoung felt positive that this was the much-needed change required to repair the bond between father and son. She excitedly asked the prince if he felt like his relationship with his father would finally improve, and his reply jolted her. He yelled at her angrily and said she was foolish for believing what the king says, for he believes nothing he says, and in the end, he would surely wind up dead. Lady Hagyoung held back her tears. She slowly began realizing that there was nothing that could be done to repair the bond between father and son, and likely nothing would stop the killing. With things between Sato and his father reaching an all-time low, and the violence continuing despite promising he would stop, the prince resorted to placing demands upon his sister, Hwanan. He did this knowing the influence she had with the king. After all, she was the king's favorite daughter. He began to ask her for financial support. Then he wanted her to speak to the king on his behalf, making excuses for his actions or to praise him. He even commanded her to convince their father to move so that he could avoid his father's criticism. Although Hwanan agreed to do as he requested, Paranoia was still constantly brewing in Sato's mind. He began growing suspicious of his sister, making up scenarios of betrayal in his head, and often wondering if she was the reason the king despised him. Much to the surprise of everyone, Hwanan somehow managed to convince the king to move his residence. 2 days before the move, Sato summoned his sister. When she arrived, he grabbed his sword and held it to her throat. He coldly said that if anything ever happened to him, he would kill her. Hwanan begged her brother to spare her life and promised to do as he commanded. He paused for a moment and said he was feeling constrained in the palace and demanded she get her father's permission to let him go on a trip. The princess, fearful for her life, agreed, and she was finally allowed to leave. With the king moved permanently, and under the impression that his son would no longer commit violent acts, the prince was free to use the palace as he saw fit, without fear of repercussions. One day, in 1761, his once adored second consort and mother to several of his children, Pingye, was helping him get dressed. She had actually been the only one for quite some time that he allowed to help him dress. When the prince flew in to an unexpected fit of rage over his clothing and beat Pingye senselessly until she was barely conscious, he then left her alone in a pool of her own blood to die. The prince didn't acknowledge or even seem to recognize what he had done. No one knew where he had taken off to, and Lady Hagyoung knew that she had to quickly move the body before he returned. Once he realized what he had done, there's no telling what could happen. She took the body to Yongdong Palace for the funeral. After the prince returned, he had heard of what took place, but he never mentioned Pingye again. The number of lives that Prince Sato continued to take were countless, and there was no sign of the sickness that had a hold over him retreating. He began hallucinating. People were all around him, and before he went anywhere, he would send someone to clear them all away. He would have fortune tellers come to the palace, and if they said something he didn't like, he would kill them. In fact, any person who came to the palace to tend to him or answer his questions, such as doctors or astronomers, would be facing a life or death situation. If they said something that displeased him or he felt they were evil, he would kill them or gravely injure them. His behavior was erratic and frightening and caused panic from inside and outside of the palace. The prince was also constantly speaking bad about his father. He would even order eunuchs and ladies-in-waiting to yell out vile things about the king. Fearing for their lives, they, of course, did as they were told. He began rebelling against the alcohol ban and began drinking wine and liquor and would hold several parties. His hallucinations by this point had a full hold over him. One evening, he told his sister, Hwanan, that his illness was caused by a deep injury. She seemed terror-stricken by what the prince had told her, and then together they spoke badly about the king. Rather Lady Hwanan believed this, or rather she was playing along as to not enrage her violent brother, we will never really know. I also want to note that we will never know what those things could be that they were discussing, as Lady Hagyoung doesn't tell us. She even goes as far as saying that no matter if her life were to hang in the balance, she could never say anything disrespectful about her king. It makes me believe that what Sato was saying was some sort of delusion or paranoia that he was experiencing at the time, and probably not anything rooted in reality. The state in which the prince was living had by this time been completely indicative of his mental state. Lady Hagyoung said his residence no longer looked like it belonged to a human, but instead a funeral chamber. He had red flags strung up all over the walls. Leftover food and alcohol were spread out all over the tables and floors, and the rooms stayed in a constant state of disarray. Then, adding to the anxiety felt by the rest of the palace, the prince started building essentially what we would call an underground bunker, complete with three small rooms and only a small hatch in the ceiling to get in and out of. When it was finished, he had grass laid on top, and then he covered the small hatch with a patch of grass, so it was completely hidden from the outside. He lit the bunker with small lamps and eventually moved all of his military weapons and riding gear down there. Although Lady Hagyang insisted his reason for the bunker was only to hide his military weapons, the others in the palace couldn't help but suspect that something more sinister was taking place down there. And again, we have no proof of this at all. It was never mentioned, but one can only assume. Also, it's worth mentioning that by this time, he was hallucinating almost daily and would spend hours upon hours in his bunker. So it could have been him trying to withdraw and isolate himself, especially if he feared social interactions or his paranoia started getting worse. In that same month, the prince's mother came to visit the palace, especially wanting to see the grand heir and his new wife. Prince Sado was said to have been strangely happy during this visit, with Lady Hagyang believing that he knew this would be his last farewell to his mother. He showered her with gifts, musical performances, military shows, and the most lavish foods that he could find. Although Lady Sanhui was happy to see her son and appreciated all that he was doing, she too now saw for her own eyes how ill he had become. She had heard the rumors, of course, but perhaps wanting to give her son the benefit of the doubt, she often wondered if the stories were exaggerated. However, now seeing her son in the flesh, she knew that he was very troubled. The king would soon receive a letter from a council member, Na Kyung-un, charging the prince with 10 heinous crimes. The prince was enraged and wanted to know who was scheming against him. So in an effort to find out, he brought Na Kyung-un's brother, Sang-un, to the palace and began torturing him in hopes to get an answer. Sang-un did not give in and told Sado nothing. Sado's anger only grew, and he soon threatened to kill Sang-un's young son. Although the prince was ordered by the king to await punishment for the crimes he was accused of, he was still filled with rage and plotted a way to kill Sang-un's son. He even went as far as trying to escape the palace, but was eventually apprehended and brought back. Just when things seemed that they couldn't get any worse, the king heard a rumor that spread through the palace like wildfire, that the king himself was Sado's target. Although these claims are sworn to be untrue by Lady Hagyang, the king was still tormented with what to do with his son. During this time, there was a law that a royal could not be executed, as the body could not be defiled. And additionally, they practiced communal punishment, which meant that Lady Hagyang and her son, which was the family's only direct male heir, would also face death or banishment if Sado was executed as a criminal. Also keep in mind that if the rival factions saw weakness within the monarchy, they could use this opportunity to take them down, so the king had to be aware of that possibility too. Lady Sanhui now realized at this moment that her son was never going to get better and that the illness had completely taken over him. As much as she loved her son, she also had to think of her duty to the kingdom and the future of the dynasty and even the safety of her family. She visited the king and told him that her heart was breaking and no mother should have to do this, but the prince's condition was beyond repair. And there was no way to preserve the dynasty or ensure the safety of the kingdom except by doing what duty required. Her eyes were filled with tears as she told the king and asked him to please have mercy on Sado's wife, Lady Hagyang, and her son. It said without hesitation that the king began the journey to Chengdok Palace. Prince Sado heard whispers that the king was on his way and became fearful and nervous. He could sense something terrible was going to happen. He secretly ordered all of his weapons to be hidden. He then called for Lady Hagyang to come see him one last time. To her surprise, he didn't ask to run away or escape together. He simply said to her, in a calm voice, "It looks bad, but they will let you live." When the king arrived, a messenger was sent to summon the prince, and a eunuch was instructed to fetch a rice chest. After some reluctance, the prince, wearing his dragon robe, went to the shrine where his father was waiting for him. The king ordered his son to take his own life, but he refused. The prince was then stripped of his robe, stripped of his title, and then ordered by his father to enter the rice chest. Sato could be heard begging for mercy, telling him that he would do his studies and obey him in every way, but the king did not sway from his decision. It's even said that the prince called him father rather than his majesty, which he had never done. At one point, Sato's son, the grand heir, Yi San, only 11 years old at the time, ran to his grandfather and begged him to forgive his father and free him. But the king refused and yelled at him to leave. The king then ordered the rice chest to be bound with rope, covered with grass patches, and taken to the upper palace. Day and night, the screams from the prince would echo through the palace, gradually getting weaker and weaker, until on the seventh day, the noises stopped. The prince's official cause of death was starvation. The king changed his son's name to Sato, which meant thinking of with great sorrow. The king then declared that the grand heir, Sato's son, Yi San, would now become the crown prince, a decision that relieved Lady Hagyang. Although she felt a strong desire to end her life, she continued on to support her son, who was left vulnerable after his father's death, a decision she says would haunt her. On the 15th day after Sato's death, the king had the prince's title restored. However, he forbade anyone from ever speaking his name again during his reign. While still the crown prince, Yi San wrote to his grandfather requesting that the records of his father's manner of death be destroyed. The king agreed, and with that, the records were gone. As time passed, the people who knew of Prince Sato's life and death grew fewer and fewer, causing many rumors to circulate with little truth of what actually occurred. By the time Prince Sato's grandson would take the throne, he knew almost nothing of his grandfather's life. His father rarely spoke of his father, and when he did, he never mentioned the incident that occurred. Lady Hagyang felt her grandson should know the truth, and he had a right to know of an event that had such an impact on their family the way that it did. Lady Hagyang would go on to write her memoirs, detailing her life and marriage to Prince Sato, until she passed away in 1815 at the age of 80. In the 19th century, a conspiracy began circulating that Prince Sato was not mentally ill or a sadistic killer, but that this was carefully crafted propaganda and that he had been framed by the rival factions. There is no evidence of this, though, and Lady Hagyang's account directly contradicts it. And I will say, having read her entire memoirs, I am definitely not of the opinion that it was faked or falsified in any way. She is very consistent, and I feel like the details are written in a way that at least I can tell that they're from experience, not just someone telling a story. Also, in the annals of the Joseon Dynasty, there are two records of murders he committed. One was the murder of Pingye, his consort, and the other was after his death, the king ordered the court to send money for the murdered eunuchs, which supports what Lady Hagyang mentions in her memoirs. And there are also records from two of the opposing political parties that also support that these were indeed true events. The legacy of Prince Sato is one that still sparks debate and discussion to this day, Some view him as a tragic figure who was unfairly treated due to the stigma and lack of understanding of mental illness, while others see him as a dangerous and sadistic individual whose actions threatened the future and safety of the kingdom. His story will continue to be studied and will always serve as a reminder of the impact of mental health on our past, present, and future. Well, everyone, that's it for us today. I hope you enjoyed this episode and feel free to join the conversation, comment on our post on our socials, and let us know what you think of this tragic story. And I will see you next time on Haunted History.